Welcome to the latest edition of the Fringe Average podcast. It's a Fringe Average shorty as we just try and get some camp notes back from spring training for a couple of days in his Brooklyn abode. Jason Parks, I'm Mike Farron, and we're heading back out on the road within like probably 24 hours of the first download of this. So you ready to get back to the heat?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I was there for 10 days and I flew home for a couple just to catch my breath. And it was that perfect time of the season where, you know, I've been doing the minor league workouts and then doing the major league game. And, you know, when I get back, it's full steam ahead on the backfield minor league action. So I needed a couple of days in the away out of the sun and in my apartment so I could tackle the next couple of weeks.
So would you'll catch a minor league game in the morning generally, and then catch the at least the last couple innings of the big league game?
No, I mean, it usually just depends. I mean, the minor league, the backfield games tend to run shorter, and if they don't, they're brutal. I mean, if you have a 3-hour backfield game, something's gone horribly wrong. And they usually do, especially if you're watching the low A or high A sides. It can get kind of rough back there, and you know they're not usually banging innings like they do at in Instruct. So you have to sit through some pretty bad baseball. Now, what I usually do is I usually hit workouts in the morning, so I'll be out there from like 7:30 or 8 until like the respite before the 1 o'clock game, which is on the backfields, and I'll pound those out. And if I happen to have, usually you have like 4 fields going. And so I'll sit on a game, and then I'll move to applicable games if the other game closes down or the other game has a better matchup, and I'll rotate. But those games usually wrap up, but not in enough time for me to hoof it to the main stadium to catch much of anything.
Okay. All right. I was just curious because I know early on you like to catch the big league games. I mean, listen, early on, I used to think like when I was a kid that the last 10 days of spring training were the only ones worth watching. Now it's the first 10 days because before minor league camp opens, you get to see some of these guys against actual big league competition. It's you get a sense of where they're at better, certainly.
It's one of my favorite things to do, at least as far as like scouting perspective is concerned. I mean, getting to watch the young kids before they're reassigned to minor league camp play and, the big boy field against major league competition. And, it's one of the only times where you can get close to simulating major league game speed. And so you get to see these young hitters or young pitchers, you get to see them, clearly either pressing or comfortable. When you see a young player who's comfortable, it really stands out. When you see a young player who's, like Robert Stevenson, I saw him, I know he's got electric stuff, but like, watching him in the big league game facing a big league lineup, he was facing the Royals, and man, the Royals can hit the baseball.
Right.
And it was a welcome to game speed type of thing. It's like, oh yeah, I'm glad you can throw 95. Let me put it about 420.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting pulled like crazy, like Hosmer and Country Breakfast and Gordon, they were all pulling him. They were all pulling, 94 plus. And it was just one of those things that he got noticeably amped up. He was noticeably like, I don't want to say out of his element, but he was, he was definitely playing up. And everything got a little straight. Everything got a little flat. And a big league team showed him what they can do with velocity. I think it's an excellent lesson. It was great scouting.
You know, we were talking about this actually today on the radio show because we were talking a little bit about the Diamondbacks. And I know this is kind of off script, but I kind of want to get your take on it. They're in a position right now where they have two starters who are hurt. Cahill tweaked his knee the other day covering first, and Arroyo's been dealing with a back. And so there's been some speculation that maybe at the start of the year, Archie Bradley could, open in the rotation. And I always wonder if that's not a bad idea, especially in April, to be able to – I know every game counts the same, but in April, at least you've got an idea. You've got a long time to make up ground if a guy does get shelled, that it gives you a taste of what it's like to face big league hitters before you go back to the minors so that you can see exactly what it is that you have to work on when it comes. Because the number one thing, I think, is when guys get sent back, it's because they're not locating their fastball, first and foremost.
Absolutely agree. I mean, I think that that's the one thing that these minor league guys can get away with at the minor league level. If you're throwing like Archie Bradley, Ventura, guys like that, Robert Stevenson, guys who can throw smoke, you can be really loose and throw smoke in the minors and be highly successful. If you can throw a fastball and just flip in a, a weak curveball or just a show me curveball or even locate a changeup or even get it over, you're going to have a lot of success and you're not really going to be tested. You get to face those major league quality hitters, major league game speed. You can't locate your fastball, man, you're not going to make it for long. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you start to see that. It's like fastball command is so important. You know, it is the backbone of pitching. And if you can't put your fastball, doesn't matter what your secondary stuff is, it's not going to work. So as far as Bradley, man, I'd like to see him in the rotation just as a fan. I mean, he's looked okay in camp. I mean, he's got stuff for days. And the fastball command is always going to be a little loose for him, but you know, the same thing as with Ventura. He's fighting for a spot right now, too. You know, he's obviously had a bit of a taste already, but, I mean, his fastball command still needs to take a great jump. Robert Stevenson obviously isn't ready, but it was good to see him face a lineup that can hit fastballs because sure. It was a good kind of, oh, wow, you know, 95 doesn't have the same play that it does in the minors. That's going right by double-A bats, right by triple-A bats. It didn't go by Country Breakfast's bat at all, and Hosmer put it about 410.
Well, yeah, I mean, and then the next thing is being able to command at least one of those secondary pitches well enough that you can get a strike with it, because otherwise you start – you talk to enough big league hitters and they start talking about eliminating pitches. So you can throw strikes at the fastball. Okay, that's good. And that'll get you through for a little while, but then you better get one secondary pitch at least that you can throw for a strike when you need to, or they're going to start cutting those out, and then you just become – your meat, your toast. And so, I mean, it's fun watching the development process. Exactly.
Right. If you can't flip over a secondary pitch for a strike, then, you know, after they've seen the fastball, then they're just going to sit on the fastball, and then they can start cheating on the fastball. And once they start doing that, your velocity won't matter.
Right.
You know, they will time to it. So that's why, I mean, man, major league pitchers are so good. You know, that's the guys who can stick around for a long time are so good. They can locate their fastballs. They have movement. They have deception. They have secondary offerings that they can throw for strikes. Now, here's the thing that I think that I get too enamored with, and I, you know, obviously people want to hear about plus secondary pitches and all this kind of jazz, and that's great. But man, if you can locate average secondary stuff and have really good fastball command, you're going to pitch a long time. You know, you're going to be very successful with the command element. I mean, you have some of these guys that just have exploding stuff, but they don't know where to put it. You know, they can't refine it. I'm starting to favor guys who can locate a little bit better without, you know, even if they don't have quite the intensity. Let's, you know, maybe guys who throw a little bit more, as much as I love the big curveballs, are really hard to command, you know, so you start to see guys with little shorter sliders that just find weak contact or get out of innings, but they can locate it and they can play it off their fastball. Those guys are going to have a lot more success than the guys who are throwing these big hammers that don't know how to command them. They look great in the minors, they're going to miss a ton of bats, but at the major league level, these guys don't last that long.
Let's use that to dovetail into the conversation. I know we each had like two or three things that we wanted to touch on, and this actually jives with one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and that's I was in Pirates camp, and so I got to talk to a bunch of people about Jameson Taillon, and he happened to pitch the day we were in camp and got knocked around. It was his last outing before he got sent out. But I remember last year, you and I were having a conversation about him and his breaking ball and whether or not it was, you know, a pitch that was going to play at the big league level. And it was really interesting talking to Pirates people about what they thought he still needed to do. And it was like threefold. I mean, there's a laundry list of things that they feel like he still needs to do to be successful. He's got to command the fastball like we were talking about. And I know that it gets a sounding cliche, but everything plays off it. He's got to continue to develop the changeup. He was throwing the changeup as many as 20 times a start from A ball on. He's still trying to get the right feel for it. He's feeling better with it. And they need to be able to see him throw the breaking ball for a strike as opposed to just trying to get it as a chase swing and miss pitch. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was, you know, that stood out because of a conversation you and I had last year about him, because that was one of the issues was, is that curveball going to play at the big league level because he hasn't been able to throw it for a strike yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something you can have concern about. I mean, I think that he has some pitch ability. I think that he's going to be able to refine a little bit more than maybe some think. I mean, obviously, scouts cooled on him a little bit, or at least some of my sources cooled on him a little bit last year. You know, I mean, it's really interesting. I think that there's a trial by fire that happens as well that doesn't necessarily happen in the minors like we were just talking about, where you can get away with things and you're not forced to make certain adjustments. I mean, I think that once you reach a major league level and once you get beat around by major league hitters, you know, either at the start of camp or once you get your call up, it's kind of a, oh, okay, this is what I need to work on. you know, this is something that I really have to stress. This is something that I, even though I was aware of it, you know, the application of it wasn't as pressing because I could still get away with certain pitches at the minor league level against minor league bats that, you know, the curveball is such a, you know, it's such a fastball, you know, dependent offering. You know, because of the speed of the pitch, the fact that, you know, you're casting it in a way or you're snapping it so that there's going to be like a tumble effect. So if you don't locate your fastball and the hitters aren't sitting or aren't waiting, you know, preparing for a fastball, then that sort of slow breaking type of pitch isn't really going to fool a major league hitter. So you have to, it all starts. The backbone has to start with that fastball command. You can locate your fastball, you know, you can get by with a pitch like that, you know, and at least until he gets his command of it. But if he can't locate his fastball, man, he's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Right. And that was, you know, it was interesting talking to Neil Huntington a little bit in comparison to, say, Cole, you know, because the two wanted to be linked together. And listen, I think, you know, one of the things that you can get caught up to, and the Pirates have a set development plan that they want everybody to follow. And they've been tweaked an awful lot by longtime baseball people, I think in part because they had a development guy who wasn't from the inside baseball running their development department for a long time. And I do think that you know, when you see when Cole comes up that they had a plan, like the strikeout rate in AAA was obviously low because they were working on impounding the bottom of the zone with his fastball, which he did. But Huntington said that he had thought this, and then he talked with one of his longtime like baseball mentors, somebody he really trusted who'd been in the game, and said that what Cole did in the second half was the fastest they had ever seen a pitcher make adjustments. And, you know, Cole was unbelievable the last 2 months of the season and into the playoffs. And I think it's really interesting to take kind of in context with Tyone. I mean, obviously, we've seen the work that they're doing. They've got the things that Tyone needs to focus on when he goes back to Indianapolis. But to expect him to do what Cole did when he came up is probably unfair to Tyone. It doesn't mean that he's not still going to be a top-flight major league starter because there's a lot to like about him. He's incredibly bright. I mean, this is the first time I'd ever had a chance to talk to him, and, man, he's, for a 21-year-old kid, I mean, he's got his head on straight. I think he's going to be. I think he's got a chance because of that intelligence to be, when it matches the talent, to be very, very good. But the idea that he can do for them this year what Cole did for them last year, I think is putting undue and unfair pressure on the kid.
I think I completely agree with you. He also doesn't have Cole's stuff. I mean, he's got nasty stuff, but I think that putting the nasty label on Tyone's stuff doesn't do Cole's stuff justice. I mean, Cole could end up one of those rare, you know, 887 type of guys who has an understanding of where he wants to put it. You know Cole, he's a highly competitive, you know, he's got the body, he's got the size. He's got the snarl, he's got that competitive edge. And not that Tyone doesn't, because he does, but, you know, Cole has all of those components with pitchability, with the, you know, 7+8 fastball, with the 7+8 breaking ball, with the changeup that I've seen flash 7 before and will probably get there eventually, especially if he's able to locate the fastball. That's a top of the rotation guy. That's a guy that could become the ace guy that everybody seeks, the guy with consistency who to go out and give you 200 plus 33 starts a year, you know, of dominant, you know, frontline pitching. He has those characteristics. Tyone's probably going to come in a little bit under that, and I think it's a lot to expect for him to come to the major league level and find those type of results, even though he has that ceiling, because his now stuff isn't quite as refined as Cole's was coming in.
Well, he's also a couple of years younger, too, still than Cole. I mean, Cole was what made his big leg debut at, 23 last year? So those couple of years of maturity, you know, mental maturity, even though Tyone is, I think, mature beyond his years. You know, even the Pirates people were saying, listen, when you drafted him, I mean, he came in, he was like one of the brightest 18-year-olds we've ever been around. You know, that you'll see that kind of, you know, tick up as he goes along. It just may be a little bit longer development train to that point. And that's one of the problems that you get into if you're Pittsburgh of the world, where you have these talented players and you're trying to maximize their talent by leaving them in the minor leagues long enough to develop, while at the same time knowing that they're probably better than some of the current options you have. You may rush them and it may take longer for them to get to their ceiling, which ends up costing you money down the line, but you need the wins now. And I think that's something that they face really with Tyone and with Polanco this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's easy for us on the side, and I'm not speaking to, you know, you and me, but, like, looking at these decisions that front offices make, I mean, these guys got to keep their jobs. You know, these guys need to win. These guys can't always have the sort of, you know, developmental window that these prospects need. You know, these guys have to put the best team they can possibly put on the field. They've got to win now because they've got to keep their jobs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that gets lost. Also, what gets lost is us saying something positive about a guy named Cole. That's unfamiliar. We keep saying Cole, he's face? So good at this, and Cole, he's so good at that. Well, I mean, the only Cole I know is the face of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, face of MLB, face of MLB. Now, you spent quite a bit of time on the backfields. Would it, based on the vaguely sexual texts that I continually received from you, is it safe to say that you were impressed? No, I'm sorry. Overtly sexual texts that I received from you, that you were impressed with Sean Manaea?
Well, okay, here's the thing. It's like a couple of the texts I sent you had nothing to do with baseball and were just straight overt sexual.
No, yeah, I know, but that's, I mean, I don't know that we need to go into that. I think that's just assumed.
Okay, yeah. I'll make sure to include it into a baseball context from now on.
No, you don't need to. I mean, I much prefer the just overtly sexual discussions. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with baseball. I was sharing them with Jorge when I had dinner with him, so.
Oh, wow. I bet you had to pay for the meal.
Yeah, I did.
He's a pretty cheap date, though.
He puts up.
He did. So, yeah. So I was on the backfield. I was on the Royal side, surprise. And I heard that he was going to throw a little bit of a pin, and then he was going to throw a live BP session. It was going to be his first of the camp. And I was looking forward to it. You know, everybody had high hopes for this kid coming into that spring. We've talked about him, you know, how he slid down the draft, how people questioned the Royals, what they were doing at the time when they went Dozier and then saved the money to go with Manaea, and is he healthy? Here's the thing. Well, we ended up putting him in the BP 101 because I got good reports from Fall Instructional League that he was healthy and that he was able, you know, to pitch healthy, to pitch athletic, to show his command, that the kind of command that was going to potentially make him a 1-1 candidate. And everybody is fascinated with what he did on the Cape. You know, can he return to that guy on the Cape? And I'm not sure that he's that guy anymore, but I mean, also that's kind of in bursts. So we'll just see going forward how that all comes about. But anyway, I watched him throw his bullpen. It was okay. And then I watched him come in and throw a live BP, and he was like 89-90. I tweeted it out. Royals fans had a sad, you know, it was the end of the world. Manaea's 89-90. Breaking ball was sweepy, but okay. Turned over a really nice changeup. You know, the thing is when he was 89-90, nobody was squaring him up at all. And that's kind of the thing that people need to remember about him, that even at that velocity, even with, like, you know, fringe 5 or 5 velocity, his fastball was playing up well above plus just because it's a ghost ball. It's really hard to pick up out of the hand. He's got a lower slot and a really fast arm. And the way that he's very upright and he brings his legs straight up, and the way he comes over with the ball, it's hard to pick up. It's hard for both sides of the plate to pick it up. And when he can locate his sweepy slider and when he can locate his changeup, that's a tough matchup. And I walked away thinking I'd like to see more velocity, but it was early in camp, and I was still impressed with the effectiveness of the fastball despite the velocity. Then I was watching Ventura pitch in the big league game a couple of 3 or 4 days later. And I heard that he was going to be throwing in game action on the backfields in surprise. It was like a inner squad. And so I went back there, and yeah, sure enough, he was just starting to pitch when I got back there. And he sat 93-94 in the first inning, just painting both corners. In fact, one of the sexiest pitches I've seen so far in camp, lefty-lefty, he goes outside corner on the black, 93. It was just like, fuck, man. You know, that's okay. So the velocity's there. The second inning, he was 92-93, mostly 92, but like to the point where he was surgical with his fastball. He was putting it exactly where he wanted it. There was a botch play in the field, and he had a runner on base. And if you've ever seen him, he has a pretty idiosyncratic move from the stretch in which he – doesn't come full set, but he brings his leg up and puts it back down again. And that's uncomfortable for runners. And what's funny is that there's a bunch of scouts sitting behind and we're all debating like the merits of, is that a balk? And if so, why isn't that a balk? So that was fun. But the interesting thing was, is that the velocity, it looked easy. It looked crisp. He's got a lower slot. It's not quite low 3.4. It's just a tick above that, but it's a little bit, it looks a little bit lower than the standard 3.4 slot. And he's able to keep his wrist and hand over the ball. So he's actually able to create a little bit of angle from that slot, which is nice. I mean, he's a big dude. He's a big horse. So if he's like 6'5", he's bringing that leg up. He's idiosyncratic from the stretch with that leg lift, so timing is a little bit messed up. And he's painting to both corners. He's working north and south and east and west with a fastball that has some late tail to it at 92 to 94. Man. That's the guy that they thought that they were getting. That's the guy who was in the discussion for the top pick in the draft. That's a guy who's probably going to start in high A, and that's a guy who's probably going to be able to help the major league team a lot faster than people realize. So, you know, it's a small sample, but I know what it looks like, and that's what it looks like. And if he can stay healthy, I mean, obviously you got to think about that lower slot and how it feels with his shoulder. Is this a guy who can stay healthy? All the caveats are there. That said, 92 to 94 and surgical command is something that is going to keep you in the major league, in a major league rotation for a very long time.
Yeah. Is the arm slot that much lower than where it was when he was healthy in college, like where he was in the Cape or where he was a sophomore year at Indiana State?
I think he's moved it up and down. I'm not 100% sure. I talked to one source that was like, I saw him when he pulled it up a little bit to like 3/4. Hmm. I've talked to another scout who saw him on the Cape when it was a little bit lower than that. He stayed pretty consistent in the slide, but as I said, you know, it's not, I didn't go out there and measure him or anything.
Sure, sure.
I tried to, but I mean, the Royals are pretty, they know my game. It looked just a little bit lower than standard 3/4, but not quite, you know, low 3/4, although maybe it was there and I was just missing it. But he was able to, as I said, able to keep his hand over the ball. He was able to create angle. It was whippy, but it wasn't like he was a slinger.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it looked good, man, given his size, given his pitchability, the fact that the command is there. Man, this is that we're going to be looking back going, man, this was a big steal for them, because we put him in the 101 and there were some people who were like, man, that's way too aggressive. You know, nobody else put him in the 101 for the most part. You guys are, you're really out on a limb here based on an instructs report. But I mean, I think that everybody's going to look foolish when this guy's a top 25 guy at midseason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you've got to keep the amateur reports into it too. I mean, he was legitimately that mix for 1-1. I mean, that wasn't just blowing smoke. I mean, based on what he did on the Cape 2 summers ago, I mean, he was, you know, he was the talk going into last year, more so than Appel. I mean, more so than Gray. I mean, Gray was the pop-up guy. Gray and Bryant were more pop-up than Mania was going into last year. So, I mean, it's, you know, I know you never want to go too far back on those reports, but you knew it was in him. I mean, that's the guys that we're talking about, guys for 1-1, they tend to know what they're talking about if the guy fits the bill, you know?
Yeah, I think we mentioned that on the XM show or maybe Fringe Average, about how, you know, during the ranking process, how we put him high. And I think that, or maybe it was on a Royals podcast, when I just said, look, man, we know what is possible with this man. You know, we know what he can do. We know that his command can be very, very sharp. We know that he can throw that tilting breaking ball for strikes. We know that he can turn over a nasty changeup that's almost splitter-like at times. And he can, you know, he can throw that four strikes or he can drop it out of the zone. Same thing he can do with the slurvy slider breaking ball. And everything was about, you know, can he come back healthy? Can he maintain that command that really was his bread and butter on top of the stuff? And when I first saw 89-90, I thought, you know, I was kind of impressed that he was 89-90 and still missing bats the way he was and missing barrels, getting a lot of weak contact. And then when he showed up with 92 to 94, he looked like a major league pitcher out there facing those kids, and it wasn't fair to him. So we'll have to see how he progresses, but I think that Royals fans have, they should be pretty excited about what they were able to pull off in that draft. Not to mention that Dozier, man, that guy's ripped to shit. That guy is strong. Right? That guy is a very strong man, and I think that he's going to hit pretty well.
You know, it was interesting. That discussion came up on Twitter the other day, and I can't remember. It was one of your guys. It was either Shah or it was Moore that were talking about that Tampa had had him in for a workout in the draft and that he had just blown up there, and the Rays were going to take him at the end of round one if he had gotten that far. And, I mean, I guess eight is still a reach, but that's interesting. I mean, that's – it's a little bit of – I mean, I guess it looked like a reach is what I should say. If they're right on him, then that's going to be a hell of a draft. What turned into a pretty good class.
I know, and, like, people were very quick to, like, go, oh, what the hell are you doing, Dozier? That's a reach. You know, the people who like to grade the draft the day of the draft. And, you know, I talked to a couple of teams after I, you know, saw these – guys on the backfield for the first time, and it was like, hey man, what do you think of Dozier? And it's like, man, we liked him in the draft. We didn't think that he was going to go that early, but we had him where we were in the mid first round range, and we would have popped him. Mm-hmm. You know, we think he's going to hit. And it's like, well, what do you think of the Royals draft? And it's like, dude, you know, because they had the reports on Manaea as well, and it's like, man, those first two picks look very legit right now. So we got to see what happens. The Royals haven't had the best luck when it comes to arms, especially once they start getting up the chain. But and they have a lot to work with. So I was blessed.
Well,
to see those outings.
You know, I'm willing to cut them a little bit of slack on some of the arms, just from a standpoint of a lot of those guys that they have that were looked at as starters that didn't make it of the big leagues that are helping them are guys that were kind of undersized anyway. You know, I mean, you look at Holland, and I mean, I know Holland closed for the most part in college, but Herrera, he had the injury stuff. I'm willing to cut him a little bit of slack.
Nasty.
What's that?
Herrera is filthy to watch.
I heard Lamb was really good too early in camp, that the fastball velocity was back there.
I saw him. He was 90, 92, and he touched 93, but the arm speed was much, much better than I saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought that he was going to be able to come back, because he was, you know, he'd get close to getting up to 90, and then he'd be working back in the mid 80s again. And it wasn't just that he was throwing the mid 80s, his arm speed, you know, was really slow, and it was kind of, you know, it didn't look fluid. I felt like he was going to get hurt just on the mound watching him. But this year he looked like a pitcher again. I mean, he was showing some arm speed. I don't know what that makes him anymore, but, you know, we'll have to see. They have had some, you know, bad luck in that regard. But as you said, you know, they have been able to develop some of those guys into relievers.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, you know, I got to watch Ventura face Baez. That was just like, that wasn't fair to, I mean, here's the sequence, man. This is crazy. You know, I've been watching Baez all morning. You know, Cubs finally had to say, you are way too close to this man right now. You need to stand back behind this fence that has like some padding.
And a security guard.
There's a security guard, and, you know, you should never walk out here with nothing on. It's just Arizona sun, and, you know, it's obviously cold out.
Getting the base tan, yeah.
No, but anyway, so I'm at the game, and it's like, okay, we get to see Baez in game action because Castro went out early, and so Baez is going to end up playing most of the game. You know, then the first matchup, it's like, okay, here we go. It's Baez Ventura, and Ventura goes 97, 98, 100, 101. And it was like, okay, this is normal, you know. And I turned to somebody beside me, and I was like, man, I love Baez's bat speed, but nope, you know, it's not going to happen. And then Ventura started messing with him by throwing the breaking ball, and then Baez had no chance.
And didn't Baez had two hits in that game too, didn't he?
Yeah, he squared up. I mean, I love watching him swing. He squared up one and took it off like the base of the wall.
Is that off John Roush? He, I know one of the hits was off a big leaguer, yeah.
It was off Roush. I'm not going to call him a big leaguer.
Yeah, former big leaguer, sorry, yeah.
It was off of Roush. I mean, I'm not saying that I could have hit it, but I saw it. I saw it out of the hand. And Baez kind of toyed with it a little bit. Like, he let it travel deeper than he would normally let it travel. He's a guy who likes to attack out front.
Mm-hmm.
But he let it travel a little bit deeper, and he actually ended up going to like the right center with it when he could have yanked it. I mean, he probably could have yanked it out of the ballpark. He let it travel a little bit deeper, and, you know, he does his thing with his hands, and he bat raps like a motherfucker, but he's got the bat speed to catch up to anything just about. And yeah, he kicked the shit out of that ball. It was, and then people were joking in the scout section, like, oh, it's Roush though. So a little asterisk by this, it's Roush. He's a special hitter, though, man. Baez is something else.
Yeah, well, I think you've probably talked enough about the Cubs guy. Although the text you were sending me, you were really blown away by Almora too, and just kind of and the power. I mean, he doesn't even have man muscles yet.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that he's starting to put man muscles on, and that's what I noticed the most is that he started to look more like a man than I remember him seeing him look like. I mean, his muscles are starting to develop. I mean, I think he's a little bit bigger than he's listed. You know, I know that he's like, I don't know what if he's listed at 6'1 or 6'2, but he's every bit of that. And he's in BP, he was starting to, you know, I'd gotten in, you know, kind of arguments with Nick Folaris before, because Nick Folaris thinks that he's going to be a 30 home run guy. Mm-hmm. And I was never comfortable with that. But I mean, Folaris has seen him a lot more than me. Folaris has a really good eye for that sort of stuff. We just debated it, you know. I disagreed with him, and that was fine. This was my first glimpse to see his sort of pull side power that he has, and it was pretty legit. He was putting him off into the way behind the fence. I mean, he was really launching him. He was showing his fast hands and that added strength. He looked like he was really like he's ready to really take a step forward at the plate. Hit the balls with more authority. Mm-hmm. You know, really make some loud contact. So yeah, I was impressed with all the Cub guys. I was impressed with the Royals guys, and so far in camp, I've been really impressed with a lot of the lower level Padres guys.
Yeah, what stood out? I mean, you told me before we started recording that they were really they were really impressive what they were doing over there. Was it just in terms of talent or the way that they're working with those guys too?
Well, the Padres have a ton of low level talent. I mean, they really do, and you know they work those guys. You know, I grew up spoiled with kind of watching the Rangers. The Rangers run hard camps. You know, they get those guys out early. They're playing simulated games early in camp. It's probably because they've always had a lot of prospects and they need to get them reps. Mm-hmm. You know, that they get those guys into camp and they get them working. And some other teams, you know, they don't seem to work the players quite as hard, or they make it more difficult to find out what's going on with the players by not having the names on the jerseys or not really, you know, letting people know when the camps are. But like the Padres are great about it. They'll just let you know. They'll pass out lineups. The Eric Gagne coached French national team was in town, and which half of the guys spoke Spanish. It was very unusual. But I got to see two different occasions, morning workouts and then playing games against this French national team on the backfield in front of nobody.
Right.
You know, but it's all the low level Padre guys with like, you know, some really decent arms, like Zach Eflin, got to see him, got to see some of their lower level, you know, Mikey Perez, who they just got out of the Dominican Republic, some of those type of guys. And then, you know, Van Meter, you know, recent draft pick. I got to see some of the guys, you know, in simulated drills, hitting drills and whatnot before the game, like with Renfro and whatnot. But then, you know, in game action, I get to see guys like Frenchie Cordero, who is, you know, a guy that, you know, we put on the rise into the Padres system, is a guy that I really debated putting in the top 10. Now I wish I probably would have put in the top 5. Wow. Just because of this guy's ceiling. I mean, I don't think he's a shortstop long term. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's got size. I mean, I want to say that he's probably 6'3", 175, something like that, maybe 180. I mean, he's built. He has a delicious swing. It is impressive. He took one dead center over the batter's eye, you know, and for that age and that sort of power, you know, to show that already. And he's not like a guy who gets it out by strength. I mean, he knows how to hit. Mm-hmm. He creates a lot of bat speed. He keeps his hands in a very good hitting position. He doesn't sell out for it. It's all very natural. And he's got rig. I mean, like when they're doing hitting drills and it's like, okay, runner on third, one out, here's a simulation. You have to hit a ball deep into the outfield to score this runner or your team's going to lose and your team gets a point if you do this. He walks up like it's not a big deal at all. Everybody else is cheering him, screaming. Dominicans are screaming. And he just steps into the box and bam. You know, and he walks out like, yeah, he just walks out like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do because he has that sort of talent. So I cannot wait for backfield games to really kick off because I'm going to sit on a lot of low A Padres games. They are absolutely jacked with talent down there. especially Frenchie Cordero. This is a guy that people are going to be talking about next season. He's going to be a breakout guy.
I'm always kind of curious too with the guys that when you talk about, like, they really get after their guys. I wonder if they get after their guys the same way at the major league level. I found, at least with what we saw in Florida, where the teams that got after the guys in the major league level in spring training were the ones that got after them at the minor league level too, that kind of trickles down, that the development plan is put in place to some degree with the major league manager. The Rays are a really good example of that. I mean, Madden, the day I was there, you'll love this, Madden was doing drills. He was running the drills with center fielders where he was having them turn both ways on balls hit over their head. He was practicing. He had a whole list of drills that he got from when he was in the Angels organization that he was working on. And this is in big league camp, but they're running the same drills in the minor leagues. The Orioles are another one that have a really good organized, spring training. The Red Sox have a really good organized one. Mm-hmm. They were doing drills where they were doing, it was a first and third situation where they were so, their attention to detail was so great that John Farrell was standing in the first base dugout giving the signs to the third base coach to be able to pass along to the kids. You know what I mean? Like these little things that you pick up when you're watching these drills early in camp, and you know that that's trickling down to the minor league level. I always wonder which is more reflective of the other.
You know, for years I've gone out to the backfields and like seen Ron Washington hitting fungos, you know, to the minor leaguers, you know, ripping a Winston. Saying, come on, baby. And then, like, when a kid throws it, like, check out the arm on this motherfucker. You know, it's always great to watch Wash run those kids out there. I mean, that's just pure passion. That's just pure coaching. It doesn't matter who he's coaching. He's just coaching.
Yeah. He I remember at one point I ran into him last year, and we were having a quick conversation, and he's like, I got to go hit fungos at this guy. And then he spent the next 20 minutes just peppering Profar with ground balls. I mean, this shit had hair on it. I mean, he's fucking ripping him right at him, making him work. It was great. I mean, it's, you know, 2 hours before a big league game, and he's getting after it. Yeah.
Well, you've seen some good stuff out in Florida. Who's turned your head out there so far?
Bogarts.
Really?
Here's the thing. I get to see him in the league, in the LCS last year, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you talk about guys making adjustments pitch to pitch, I think it can be kind of a vague term, and it's very difficult to understand, at least for me, because I don't have a scouting background. I got a radio background. When you watch Bogarts, you understand exactly what it means.
Good point.
So I saw him I saw him one game, and he went, what was he, 0-for-2 with a walk, with two balls that were just absolutely blistered, like lined out to the second baseman into a shift and hit a rope right at the third baseman. And the first time up, he was behind 0-1. He was facing Archer. Archer threw a changeup that just, I mean, it was one of the best changeups I've seen Archer throw, and had Bogarts way out in front. Bogarts, then he comes back to the same spot on the inner third, coming in just off the plate with a two-seamer, and Bogarts took. And it's the kind of pitch that you expect that a rookie is just going to, like, there's no chance, right?
Of course.
He misses in by about 2 inches. He takes it. The next pitch, it's down, but Bogarts is looking for something out over the plate. He's seen him kind of come in back twice in a row, looking away, and just peppers one that was ticketed for center field. And if the second baseman hadn't been standing there, it would have been a base hit. The next time up, nice. he gets 95 miles an hour, and he just turns it around and hits a bullet. The third time up, it's 1-2. He's behind in the count 1-2, and he ends up coaxing a walk, laying off two changeups that from a lefty that were just off the plate to get the count full. I mean, the bats that he was putting together, the noise it makes, you know, you hear a lot about the sound. I mean, he barrels stuff. But just those little things, you're watching him take at bats. It's fun to watch him taking at bat because he has such an advanced idea of what he's doing. And we saw it in the playoffs with him, too, that he was, you know, against really good relievers, against guys like Benoit, and putting together these at bats where he's just like, you know, there was one I think the game where they nearly got no hit, where he was behind on the count 0-2, and he ended up striking out on the at bat, but he got it full, laying off a couple of tough pitches, fouling off pitches. He got it, tried tried to get him to chase a fastball up and out of the zone, and he stayed off it. His feel for hitting is special. And, you know, he made one play deep in the hole, and the throw was late. It was a strong throw. But he showed more range than I expected out of him at shortstop. I mean, that guy is going to be really good. It's tough when you see the World Series champion, you know, potentially turn over two up the middle positions to rookies. And I'm not sure that Bradley's going to make it, and maybe Sizemore in center. But I can understand why they would trust Bogarts at short, because he's – I mean, shit. The more you see him, the more you fall in love with him.
Yeah, he's a legit player, man. I mean, he's one of those guys that you see him when he's 17. You see the same body that I'm talking about with a guy like Cordero. And you obviously project that kind of body. It's Correa's kind of in that boat as well. You project that sort of body with limited range to become even slower and even bigger. And what can happen with some of these special players is that they rise to the major league level faster than their bodies, sour on them, so to speak, or I should just say mature on them. You know, so you get a guy like Bogart who makes it up to the major leagues at a point where, okay, yeah, he's still physically the guy that you thought he was going to be, or maybe his body didn't mature at the type of rate or the type of way that you thought it was going to. Like, you see a guy like Correa, who's every bit of 6'4", and he is going to be a very big boy. You see him in low A, and you say, okay, that's a guy who's probably not going to be at shortstop long term. I'd say, 3 to 5 years, he's probably playing third. Well, here's this. What if he gets up at the end of September at the major league level?
Right.
What if he's a guy who starts the 2015 season? And I'm not trying to be an asshole here to get everybody excited. I'm just saying he's clearly the best shortstop they have in that organization. What happens if they decide, well, we're going to go with Correa in 2015? Well, he's probably still going to be at shortstop, and there's going to be people who said, well, I thought he couldn't play shortstop. We didn't think he'd be up at 19 or 20 or whatever. Right.
I think it's a really good point, because I think we're seeing guys, I mean, so many of these elite level players are advancing faster. And I think I'm sure part of it is the volume of baseball that they're playing at a younger age, that they're getting better quicker. I mean, the more exposure to high talent, how we talked about this ad nauseum. I mean, all these reasons why guys are getting better and why there's so many of these young guys that are up at such a young age. But it's been outside of the regular development path for the last 45 years, really since the draft, for this stuff to happen. I mean, the guys that we're seeing come to the big leagues and playing at this age, you've got to go back to the bonus baby days, pre-65, to see this kind of stuff.
I know. I love it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So so you are getting ready to go back to Arizona.
Yep. Flying back tomorrow. We're doing I'm getting in, and then like the next day as I have, workouts, and then a backfield situation. And then like there's a private BP party that we're having for, some of our sources and, people in the baseball industry, as a way of saying like, we really appreciate all that you've done for us over the past year. We had one last year. It was a whole lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to that, because that's going to be really my only beacon of hope outside of the baseball field. Because after that, it's workouts and it's games, and that's when it starts to get a little bit warmer out there, and it's a grind. But I'm looking forward to knocking that out. I'm looking forward to seeing some really good talent. Going to go down to the Rockies camp, going to go back down to Cubs camp. I'm just going to try to hump as much as I possibly can out there, and we'll see.
Are the Rockies the team that you haven't seen yet that you're most excited to see?
I haven't seen them yet this camp, right. But it's definitely a lower level. Once they start breaking off into the low A, high A's, it's definitely a low A, high A matchup that I want to catch, just because of the young positional talent they have down there. And, getting good eyes on McMahon or, Tapia or Dahl or the like, guys like that. I also wouldn't mind catching some of the double A and triple A games when some of those other guys start trickling down from major league camp. But, I really want to see the kids. So I want to see the low A guys. I want to spend a lot of time with the Padres. I want to spend a lot of time with the Royals. I want to spend a lot of time. I've had a good time watching some of the Reds prospects. So I'm just going to see as much as I possibly can in the remaining 2 weeks that I'm there, or a little over 2 weeks.
Awesome.
Awesome. And you're flying back tomorrow too?
Friday. Yeah, I go back. We've got six more camps to do, so we'll do. Let's see, Braves, then Astros, then Marlins, Cardinals, Mets, Nationals. Come home, and the day after I get home, I've got Rodon and Jake Stinnett at NC State at University of Maryland, right up the road.
Okay.
So I'll be pretty good. Stinnett just got written up by Phalaris, I saw too, as a senior guy who's had a really, really good start to the season. Pitching's been really good in college baseball this year. There's no fucking offense.
Yeah, I really like what Phalaris is doing with those draft 10 packs on Baseball Prospectus. Yeah. Those have just been phenomenal, usually accompanied by video. I mean, he's already humping it already. Yeah. I mean, seeing tons of talent in the season just started. He's got Stefan Segui helping him out. A lot of those, the kid's an up and comer in baseball.
Yeah, the matchup he's going to get Friday night is
with Beattie.
A really good one. Beattie and Nola.
Yeah,
I love Nola, man. You want to talk about a guy who's surgical from the right side? I mean, it's a low arm angle and it's not overpowering, but holy shit, can he locate? I mean, he is really, really good. That's going to be a really fun with two really good matchups because Rodon is facing Florida State and Luke Weaver.
Okay.
So that should be a good one too. NC State and Florida State in Tallahassee. I think it's in Tallahassee. I can't remember.
Well, so, safe travels to you, my friend.
Thank you. You too. If you want to email us, you can do so. FringeAverage@baseballprospectus.com. Follow us on Twitter @FringeAverage or Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/FringeAverage podcast. You can join our 1,200 or so, give or take, members of our adorable little community there.
It is adorable.
It is cute. Jason's on Twitter @ProfessorParks. I'm Mike Farron, SXM. I know it's a short one, but once you get back from Arizona, I figure once we get to opening day or right around, we'll have another one and give some final notes and I don't know, get ready for the season. I'm ready. More games. Need more games.
I'm ready for backfield action. Then I'll be ready for the season. Yeah, two more weeks standing behind a fence. Nobody else around.
You do like backfield action.
I'd live for it.
All right, we'll see you later.
All right.